there is no security perimeter that will go on forever. In other words, you've got a protectee, right? And the job of the people who are protecting that protectee, be they Secret Service, police, private security, or whatever, is to create a safe perimeter. But there is some point that perimeter is going to end. And where the perimeter ends is where the vulnerability begins. And in this particular case, the vulnerability is cultural, and nobody's talking about that.
That's so awesome.
Nobody's talking about that cultural vulnerability.
Oh my gosh, Shayna.
And that's the stuff, that's what we try to do here. Welcome to What in God's Name? He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
We are the podcast that seeks to move our conversation, the public square conversation, the conversation of our common good, past the binaries of politics and economics, which dominate so much of what we hear in the public square these days, but which does very little to move us towards a place of human flourishing.
Yeah, the lenses that we use on What in God's Name and in the S1 Project, of which What in God's Name podcast is the podcast of, the lenses of moral philosophy and theology to see deeper, this metaphor of lens, it's a metaphor of vision, of seeing. And we're using these lenses today for a special edition to talk about the assassination attempt on former president and current candidate for President Trump.
We begin our show during the normal season with a spinny wheel, and though I was an advocate for passing on it today, Christopher apparently cannot continue without it. So we're going to give the spinny wheel a wing, see where it ends up, and do a little riff on one of the, how many are there? 16 core concepts of the S1 Project and the What in God's Name podcast. We'll see where it lands. We'll give it a little riff. Go ahead, Chris.
The spinny wheel has landed on randomness and playfulness, which it's one of our core values. It's important to be playful. So there's a kind of a straightforward understanding, playfulness. You know, human beings, we should enjoy and have fun. But the deeper for me is playfulness is it speaks to open-endedness, possibility, creativity, and these are really core elements, certainly for the S1 Project and our show and the work that we do together, Shayna. But it's also important if we think about a democratic, self-governing polity that has to have, if it's going to survive through time, it's going to have the kind of open-endedness of continuing conversation. And part of that open-endedness, it has to do with how we do elections. If you lose, it's not forever. And if you win, it's not forever. There's an open-endedness to this. I'm riffing on playfulness to get to this open-endedness kind of idea. In a dictatorship, there's no future. There's no way to move from one to the next. There's kind of it's a more closed system.
It's like Groundhog Day.
Like, what the heck are we going to do when Putin dies? We don't know. If we live in Russia, it's like, I don't know. How is that going to work? In a democracy, if it's working well, there's an open-endedness to the conversation that people have, and there's an open-endedness to elections, to a new beginning every time.
Yeah, I like the way these two, randomness and playfulness, intersect with a holy curiosity. You know, there's an assumption inherent in randomness and playfulness that what is to come is not yet. So in the spirit of that evolving conversation, you and I gather here on a fairly regular basis to engage in a little randomness and playfulness about the issues of our day. As we like to say, we don't break the news, we break it down. So, and as Christopher said, today is a special edition of our show following the attempted assassination of former president and Republican nominee for the presidency, Donald J. Trump. There's the tone indicating that we have made the turn from whatever topic the spinny wheel coughs up on any given day. And the topic of the day.
Yeah, so the assassination attempt on former President Trump. Shana, I confess to you that I had a lot of mixed feelings and emotions and thoughts. And so I reached out to you to propose that we do the show because I wanted to be in conversation with you about this to help me think about it and sort through a lot of different issues and concepts and feelings that I think are involved in this. So that's the kickoff I wanted to say to you. The second thing I wanted to say to you is, just to get going on this, it feels like to me that we've collectively shrugged our shoulders and just gone and just moved on as though, you know, no big deal. So there's an assassination attempt. Big deal. We're moving on. And I guess I'm curious as to whether you perceive the same thing. And to me, like, ought we not be spending a little more time as a society kind of thinking about what this means? To me, I see a lot in the press about, you know, what did the Secret Service do and where did this guy come from and blah, 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 blah. To me, the story is, what does this mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And, on matters of Homeland Security, I will always defer to Juliette Kayyem. She is a former director of Homeland Security. She's featured on Jim and Marjorie's show on WGBH, Massachusetts Public Radio. And, she wrote an article for The Atlantic right after the shooting, in which she said political violence reveals deep cultural dysfunction, and that dysfunction is what our leaders must address.
Okay, so thank you. That starts to get interesting to me. That starts to get interesting to me because it is a question about meaning. And thank you for quoting her and her words. Deep dysfunction, is that the direct quote? Is that the phrase?
The phrase is cultural reveals deep cultural dysfunction.
Cultural dysfunction. Well, what's the next right question then for us to consider? You and me and our society at large, what ought we be talking about? The cultural dysfunction of political violence.
Well, so there's a couple of things. One, you know, as a political junkie, I've been watching some of the Republican convention. Thank God for Stephen Colbert, because that's like getting a cleaning after you watch the. He's been absolutely brilliant and really funny, and also a purveyor of truth in what is too often uncontested BS that. We just hear spew forth from the mouths of so many politicians. But I want to get back to something that you said initially in your opening, which had to do with, how quickly we seem to have moved past this on the one hand. You know, of course, they're talking about it at the convention, but they're talking about it in terms of, like, they're also shocked that this happened. And it feels to me like, you all have been playing with fire now since he began running the first time, which was back. So it was the 2016 election. He announced his candidacy in 2015. So we're coming up on 10 years that you all have been peddling the language of violence. You have been laying this down 12 ways to Sunday, and now you're shocked. You're shocked, I say, that it came home to roost. The courts can't hold him accountable. The politicians won't hold him accountable. The people don't seem to be, its base does not seem interested in holding him accountable. And our leaders are not addressing the cultural issues that are on the table right now in America. They are not addressing the fact of how violent this nation has become, because up until this point, it's largely been other people's kids. Shocking in the face of the fact that we've had politicians who have been shot in the last couple of years. Gabby Giffords, Steve Scalise. You know, we've had Nancy Pelosi's husband bludgeoned to, you know, within an inch of his life. We've had these physical attacks. You know, but as long as it wasn't you, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, then by all means, don't feel a need to say anything about it.
So, yeah, so there's general violence in our culture, which we tend to not see, but it's there. And then there's, I think there's something new, which I think you've pointed to, which is the political violence. So new in this, I mean, new in the sense of in our lifetime, the last half century. Although, I mean, there was a lot of political violence in the 60s. I need to back my timeline.
Let's go back to Lincoln. Let's go back.
Well, I'm talking recent.
Okay, recent.
So,
20th century.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, well, I was saying our lifetime.
Okay.
So, but our lifetime also includes a time of great political violence when all the, you know, the Kennedys assassinated,
Martin
MLK,
Luther King,
others. So maybe the interlude of
however, let me just say
is the strange moment.
Let me say about that.
Yeah.
Those moments stopped the nation cold in its tracks.
Yeah.
Stopped us in our tracks. And there was some real thought about what had happened and why it had happened. And I think the big difference is what you said, is that it was like a news cycle. Like the day of the shooting, all the news stations were constantly on that. The next morning, I turned on the news to kind of see what any updates might be. And they were already on to, you know, local news and the weather and like, okay, it was just another shooting.
Yeah.
So that's something that has changed.
Thank you. I think that's an insightful observation. I wasn't conscious enough. I was alive, but not conscious enough to have an observation about how the society stopped and thought. But I believe that to be the case.
I remember coming home from school after Martin Luther King was shot, and you know, it was all the news stations were. It was all any net. We didn't have as many networks we have today. But all the networks were, you know, in coverage. My family was seated around the TV, glued to the TV, as were millions of other Americans, you know, glued to Walter Cronkite, to listening to the news, trying to make sense of what this meant for us.
Yeah.
And what feels so different now is that it's like, well, that's something that happened to Donald Trump, which, I mean, look, frankly, you know, in my less than higher self, it's, my mother used to have an expression, it's your bed, you make it, and at the end of the day, you're going to lay down in it. For what it's worth, the Republican Party has been bearing down on some really violent rhetoric for a really long time. And so they're all now shocked that the chickens came home to roost.
Right.
Chickens come home to roost. Anybody who's ever raised chickens will tell you.
Yeah.
They'll come home at the end of the night to roost. And that's what happened here. And too bad, so sad. But I think it points to deeper problems.
Well, a couple of things then. So this is helpful. You know, I started this conversation saying, I hope you can help me think about this. And you are. So one piece,
I felt the same way driving over here.
One piece of the meaning of the attempted assassination and our response to it, which I think is a real, like, that's, to me, that's as much a part of the story as the actual attempt on his life, is how we as a society are reacting. And we're reacting in a way that seems like we're normalizing political violence. And so let me just add that I think you are 100% right that the normalization of political violence in this time is the responsibility of, first of all, the man who was almost assassinated, and second, the enablers around him in the party that he has now taken over and which is not anymore a conservative party. So that normalization of political violence from, you know, I mean, just the mockery of Paul Pelosi after his attempted murder, the belittling of Gretchen Whitmer after, you know, that the kidnapping plot against her as the governor of Michigan, how Donald Trump valorizes the authoritarian leaders who are violent. He praises them. So it's another way that this violence, this political violence, gets normalized. I mean, for him, it's something praiseworthy, and it ought to be shameful. And that's a whole piece of this dynamic that we're living in. And of course, then the violent attempt to overthrow the election. So we can point to, like, there's a history here from the mouth, the words of this man that does end up normalizing. It desensitizes all of us to political violence. The last thing I want to say is you and I have been critical of the illiberal left, rightly so. And this is different. There's not a both sidesism on this one at all. Maybe it exists, but it certainly does not exist at the level of power and authority of, you know, a candidate for president. I mean, that just is not happening on the left. So
it was maybe a politician, maybe a reporter. Somebody got on Fox News and just let it rip. I just want to see if I can find it. Fed up Fox News host shreds GOP over Trump shooting.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Let me just play the segment.
See, this is, I'm glad you actually pay attention to news. I pay attention to news, but not the way you do.
An honest broker can possibly believe that the Democratic rhetoric is the problem here. So if the issue is that we're saying all the time that he's like Hitler and he's a threat to democracy. And by the way, J.D. Vance has also said that he's like Hitler, and I guess he's redeemed now. But Donald Trump sent a fundraising email just last week that said Joe Biden is a threat to democracy. And only one of these candidates has inspired people who sent pipe bombs to leading Democrats across the country, who has inspired mass shooters. Talk about firing up the base. Donald Trump has been doing that since 2016. Remember when he said the Second Amendment people could take care of it? Right when he was talking about Hillary Clinton abolishing the Second Amendment and she'll get to appoint judges. He talked about, remember that congressman from Montana who body slammed a reporter and he said, he's my type.
So who's that, Shana?
So that is...
That's not a Fox News reporter, is it?
That's a Fox News host.
Oh, what's
Fox News host Jessica Tarlov dropped a truth bomb all over Greg Gutfeld's desk, making sure the right-wing propaganda network's viewers know that it has been Trump and his cronies who've been inciting political violence, not President Biden or the Democrats.
Well, good for her.
And, there is no both-andism here. There is no both-andism, but let me say this, and because this gets to, you know, Julia Kayyem, of course, being a security expert, you know, began her piece in The Atlantic talking about how much we're talking about the security measures, right? And that has been a large focus of the media. In fact, it's been almost exclusively about the failure of the Secret Service, the local police, a yada, yada, yada. There is no security perimeter that will go on forever. In other words, you've got a protectee, right? And the job of the people who are protecting that protectee, be they Secret Service, police, private security, or whatever, is to create a safe perimeter. But there is some point that perimeter is going to end, and where the perimeter ends is where the vulnerability begins. And in this particular case, the vulnerability is cultural, and nobody's talking about that.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Nobody's talking about that cultural vulnerability.
Oh my gosh, Shana.
And that's the stuff. That's what we try to do here. That's Juliette Kayyem.
That's her.
That's not me.
Okay. You read it. So.
I read it. Yeah, I was. I'm smart enough to follow Juliette. But you know that is the crux of the matter right there. Is that this random kid, and it is really random. Is a random kid. He wasn't a troubled kid. He had no record. He had no nothing. A good kid. A quiet kid by everyone's take on him comes out of the blue and attempts to put a bullet in the head of who was at the time the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, is now the nominee for the Republican, attempts to put a bullet through the head of the former president of the United States. We ought to be, there are questions about security. Those really are not for you and me. That is just not the substance of our lives about how we're going to expand or contract, or what are the details of how do you manage a security those are interesting, but they're not going to advance human flourishing.
Well, exactly. They're questions that are beyond our expertise, but they're also questions that I'm just going to repeat what you just said because I was racing to the end of your sentence before you did. But it's exactly right. It's that kind of consideration. I'll say it again. Doesn't get to questions of meaning. What does it mean for us as a society, as a culture, where this kind of violence is normalized?
Because if you start to ask that question, Chris, you've got to roll all the way back.
Right.
You've got to roll all the way back to Sandy Hook. You've got to roll back before Sandy Hook. You've got to take every mass shooting that has happened in America, and particularly the ones that happen in schools, and particularly the ones like Uvalde and Sandy Hooks that involved such young children and the teachers who were trying to protect them. And why was that not enough? Why,
that's interesting.
Love of God in Christ. Why was that not enough?
So it's interesting, Shana, because I don't connect the mass shootings that we've experienced as a society with the assassination attempt, even though I should. I'm open to weighing that, but I just want to share with you how I see them as different and distinct, recognizing that obviously there are connections, one of them being the ease with which these kinds of weapons are available. I'm not blind to that connection. But the mass shootings in the United States I've seen as a cultural failure, a sense of that there's a pervasive sense of nihilism and that there are a lot of people running around who are just so desperate and so despondent that they're willing to just commit violence randomly.
You don't think this was an act of desperation?
Well, no, and it is, it's interesting. I characterize this as the assassination attempt as political violence, which has become legitimized. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't want to parse this out too much. But
no. But that's helpful for the purpose of discussion to separate it from random acts of violence that, you know, I'm sorry, you're just never going to find a reason for. With political violence, you're thinking somewhere underneath this, there was a reason.
But here's,
where you don't have all these mass shootings and this year alone, we're close to 400 mass shootings in America. We've just crossed we've just crossed half the year threshold, and we have a massive election coming up in November. And I think that in a culture where violence is not only that prevalent, but is becoming so accepted, they're outraged and they're hurt and they're flipped out every time. I mean, the people who are impacted specifically are flipped out, and everybody else goes, yep, it's just another mass shooting. Yep. Well, that was going to happen. Yep. Well, that's why I don't go to public events anymore. Yep. Well, there is just an acceptance that this is a part of our culture.
Yeah. Now that's the connection.
So how far a stretch is it then for a young kid who doesn't seem to be all that politically connected or involved to pick up a gun, go to a rally, and I don't know if he really believed he was coming back to work Sunday, but he apparently told his colleagues, you know, I'll see you Sunday. No, you take a shot at a presidential candidate, in all probability, you're going to get your brains blown out, which is pretty much what happened. I think it's to be expected.
Yeah.
I think by the time you can shoot up an elementary school and that has absolutely no impact on any law going forward whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay.
That, of course, then really the question is, where is this going to stop?
Right. Okay. So
what's it going to take to stop? And I think Juliette Kayyem's point is that, you know, it is also not for our political leaders to start exclusively diving into the realm of security, but that has become the focus of the conversation rather than what have we become as a nation?
There you go. Yeah.
That not only did this happen, but it happened and everybody went right back to business as usual. And as near as I can tell, it has had zero impact on the Republican Party because they're spewing the same hate. At the podium from at the RNC as they ever were.
Yeah.
They're taking, you know, Republican leaders who are, you know, former Republican leaders who are fresh out of prison, you know, from prison to the Republican National Convention to the podium.
Yeah.
These are the people they're elevating. They're elevating, you know, the January 6th insurrectionists.
Right.
So, you know, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm sitting here with a can of gasoline and I'm playing with matches, it's a matter of time before the freaking thing blows up.
Yeah. So here's a different metaphor that I think of, and you're going to have to help me with the Greek myth, but Pandora's box. So I just have this vivid image in my mind's eye of being a child and hearing maybe my fourth grade teacher tell that story of the myth of the box.
That was good for 12 years of therapy.
The box, you know, why does she open the box? Is she told not to open the box? Pandora told not to open the box, and she does.
I believe so.
And all of these things are released. So to me, that is an illuminative story of Trump's rhetoric lifting the lid on this Pandora's box of human violence. We are inclined to violence. You may disagree with me, but I think violence is never far away from humanity, from a civilization. We're not as good as we think we are, is my take. That's how I interpret events in the world and human nature. And so when that lid is lifted and those, dare I say, demonic powers are released, you and I deal with powerful spirits. That's our work. My view of the world, those are real. It's not just a way of speaking. Once those dark spirits are out, I mean, this is, think of Harry Potter, you know that story? Once those dark spirits are out, they wreak havoc. And I think you're totally right. The rhetoric of Donald Trump over the last, has it been 10 years?
Has longer.
It gave permission for those who have.
Oh, yeah.
It gave permission for the kind of violence.
For the record, and, you know, thanks be to the gospel of Google, Zeus told Pandora not to.
Zeus gave her
the box and told her not to open it, and Pandora did. Her curiosity led her to do so, releasing the evils of the world and bringing curses upon humanity.
And that's so interesting. I mean, so even way back in the Greeks had this intuition, this sense, this experience that those powers and spirits are at work. They were released and out and about. How do you corral those spirits and get them back in the box? You got to start by naming it and pausing. Like a culture that just is going to normalize violence and move on. I mean, that's why I wanted to do this show today, Shana. It's just like, time out. Could we just stop and talk about this for a second? I think that's step one. I mean,
I keep going back to this thing, you know, about, you know, the January 6th rioters and the people who you and I have spoken to at Trump rallies. And I just keep coming back to this place of feeling like, you know, the MAGA movement is basically a gang. It's a gang of thugs and misfits who had no other place, because I know plenty of Republicans and plenty of Republicans who are voting for Donald Trump, but who are not necessarily MAGA. So I'm speaking about, you know, the really hotbed of the base there, seem to me to be just a bunch of misfits who are looking for something to belong to. And this is what they've chosen. So I want to go back. I think it is time for us to begin to tell a new story, a new old story, taking the best of what America has always aspired to be, to stop the bullshit that we ever got there, or that that's who we are, but to recast it as an aspiration and to try to capture the hearts and minds and imaginations of people who want to be one nation under God and some not God, that's okay, but one nation of people
under something
striving for a common good. And we don't have the leaders today that I don't know that they're capable of doing it.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have the leaders who have the platform.
We don't have the leaders who have the platform.
We have leaders who are doing this. We just don't have leaders with huge platforms doing this.
It's true. I mean, I think about people like Reverend Barber and the work he's doing with the Poor People's Campaign. I think about all kinds of local activists that I know.
And there are conservative conservative Christians who are asking the similar questions as you and I. So it's no longer, I don't think it's fruitful any longer to think liberal and conservative on this one, because the MAGA crowd that you've identified is not conservative. It's its own thing.
Yeah, it's its own thing.
There needs to be a shift in the imagination, the political imagination, about where the common ground is, because it's just misleading to think of Democrat Republican, because the Republican group is not now not what it was 15 years ago,
and neither is the Democratic Party what it was during Lincoln's time. So there you
we got to talk a little bit deeper and more granularly about, I'm sorry, I've interrupted you with regards to this, but I think that
is the point. I think no matter what issue plagues us, the solution will always be found both in imagination and the courage to engage it.
I'm on board. Sign me up.
You are on board. That is the sort. That is the crucible that holds the S1 project.
That's what
right?
we're doing.
It's what we do. Engage imagination and courage.
There's so much work to be done, but okay, let's do it. Let's keep doing it. That's all.
Hey,
I got
Chris,
say.
It's been great to have a chance to talk this out with you. It really helped me think it through and probably generate more questions than answers, but that's always a good thing. So I'm going to go off and party out the rest of the summer, and I'll be thinking on this and getting geared up for when we come back together in September.
Nice. Be curious.
Go deep.
And shine light. Our work today is sponsored by our generous donors on Patreon. You can join our generous donors on Patreon by going to What in God's Name at the Patreon website. You can sign up for our newsletter and check us out. Learn more about the S1 Project at s1project.org.
That's S, the numeral one.
Yes, indeed, it is.
Project.org.
Yeah, Shana, great to be with you today. Thank you so much.
Always great to be with you, Chris.